Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. This day, 1861, Alexander H. Stephens, Vice President of the Confederate States of America, gave a speech in Savannah, Georgia, in which he drew a sharp contrast between the Confederate States and the United States, laid out the Confederacy's rationale for seceding from the United States. A number of states had already done that. And this speech would come to be known as the, quote, cornerstone speech, because the other thing he made very clear was that the cornerstone of the Confederacy was slavery and the enslavement of Black Americans. He argued forcefully for the inferiority of Black enslaved Americans and defended slavery as not just an economic force, but as a just and moral practice. This speech, of course, goes right into that big question, which we've touched on a bunch of times and American history has touched on a bunch of times, of, you know, just what was the Civil War about? What was the Confederacy fighting for? So on and so forth. So here to discuss the so-called cornerstone speech are, as always, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia and Kelly Carter-Jackson of Wellesley. Hello there.
Hello, Jody.
Hey there.
Kelly, you teach this in your course?
Or I do. Touch on this? I actually do. For a long time, I just only used primary sources. I've sort of stayed away from textbooks because the primary sources are so useful at getting at the heart of the matter, which is we don't need to quibble anymore about what the Civil War was about. The South told us. Like, the secession documents say very clearly, very specifically, why they are leaving the Union and what their motivations were for doing that. And so there's not a whole lot of wiggle room there. You know, I think that people want to talk about states' rights, but the South is very clear, like, states' rights to protect slavery. So so I think it kind of makes a lot of these discussions moot, but at the same time, you still feel, you still hear people that will debate this.
Yeah, this is a real we have the receipts kind of moment. Yeah. But nevertheless, I mean, you know, and we'll get to this, but obviously, like, this has been a contested question, even though this evidence is sort of floating out there. Before we get to that sort of larger picture, let's talk about the speech itself. I mean, the context, of course, a good number of states had seceded at this point. The CSA, we've done an episode on this, had written its own constitution. What is Stephens trying to accomplish in this moment, as we can tell?
Well, he's trying to lay out the, not just the moral rationale for why it is necessary to secede from the United States, but he's also making the case that in doing so, he is fulfilling the promises of the original founding of the United States. What's so fascinating about this document, and why I'm so glad, Kelly, that you assigned it, because you want students to be able to read these words and these invocations of things like natural law and this, the same words that are used in the Declaration of Independence, but also an appeal to science. Right. In the speech, Stevenson talks about how, well, you know, back when the Declaration was written, they said that all men were created equal. But now science has shown that that's not actually true. Black people are inferior to white people. And what's so important about that is that this is an Enlightenment document. Mm-hmm. Right? This is making appeals to reason in the same way that the founders did.
And he's basically saying that not only is slavery normal, a normal condition, but it's natural. Like, this is the order of things. This is the way that things are supposed to be. And so by making it sort of like an intellectual argument, it's taking it away from the moral idea of, like, slavery is sin and all of that. It's like, no, this is just like, this is nature. And then it makes it harder for people to sort of refute what you've presented with
So I mean, a couple key quotes. You know, he says that, quote, slavery subordination to the superior race is the natural and normal condition for Africans. He calls them Africans and Negroes. He uses those terms, but he melds it with the political, which is interesting because he says, quote, the new constitution has put at rest forever, referring to his own, to the CSA constitution, the Confederate constitution. The new constitution has put at rest forever all the agitating questions relating to our particular institution of African slavery as it exists amongst us, the proper status of the Negro in our form of civilization. This was the immediate cause of the late rupture and present revolution. So it is this melding of and this couching of a political moment, secession and a new constitution and what he calls a revolution, but in a sort of moral framework, not mm-hmm. just a we want to continue slavery for economic reasons or states' rights reasons, yada, 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 but really our document is a founding moral document, which, again, mm-hmm. I think echoes kind of the way that we've interpreted the Declaration of Independence as more than just mm-hmm. a political document.
Yeah.
A founding document that solves what he saw as the flaws in the original Constitution, mm-hmm. right? By leaving unresolved the what he would see as the right to enslavement, it had led to all of this unrest in the United States. It had led to all of that turmoil in the 1840s and 1850s, and now they've solved that. So now going yeah. forward, you can have a more perfect union because you've clarified and settled these fundamental questions.
Yeah. On this, the way the speech is interpreted, both at the time and then has been contested and interpreted and sort of used as evidence throughout history. Kelly, mm-hmm. it seems to me, well, first off, you know, I was unable to find kind of a sense of like when this started to become the cornerstone speech. Cornerstone is not yeah. used in Stevens's speech. I think people who refer to it as the cornerstone speech are trying to kind of make an argument that really slavery, look at this speech, slavery was the cornerstone of the Confederacy. Yeah. But it seems to me like the like most of the people making that argument are, you know, people in the North, yeah, historians,
yeah. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
not like people are saying, ah, oh, Stevens said it, good for him, like, this is where we're at.
Actually, you know? Benjamin Butler probably is the one that, like, really coined the phrase. So he's known, Benjamin Butler was a Union officer, and he was speaking to Confederate prisoners, and he said to them, quote, your fabric of opposition to the government of the United States has the right of property in man as its cornerstone. And so that moment just sort of became this, like, iconic way of saying, like, this is your whole thing. This is the whole ball game right here. Slavery is your cornerstone. So don't be surprised when, like, the number one thing that the Union comes for is slavery. And that's what Lincoln does with the Emancipation Proclamation. You know, the way he knows how to get at the heart of the Confederacy is through slavery. And Frederick Douglass talks about this as well. Frederick Douglass talks about this speech. He talks all about, you know, the hypocrisy and the rationale that the South has concocted against enslaved people. It's quite wild, but I think it's very clear to a lot of people that if you were to even put slavery aside, there's not a whole lot of, like, discrepancy in terms of the North mm-hmm. and the South. Like, that is the major linchpin.
It's interesting, right, that people at the time are pointing to this speech and saying this clarifies things, because there had been these decades of wrangling, and you already had, you know, appeals about states' rights and tariffs and agrarianism taxes. And all of these different things that were being put forward as a substitute for slavery as a cause of the war. And at the time, you have people, as you were saying, Kelly, like Frederick Douglass, who are like, mm-hmm. look, Alexander Stevens told us exactly what this is about. Keep it in the front of your mind. And it has been a battle for 150 years to get Americans to keep it in the front of their minds.
Yeah. But even the secession documents, if you look at South Carolina's secession documents, like their state constitution, if you look at Mississippi's, their state constitution, they're all very clear about how important slavery is for them.
And so what is your sense within the Confederacy of either rhetorically or really kind of, you know, maybe morally or in some other way? Was there a spectrum of how much should we talk explicitly about slavery as the cornerstone of what we're up to here? Were there people who were upset with Stevens for giving, you know, dropping the mask, so to speak, or what?
Jefferson Davis, you mean? I think Jefferson Davis. So there is. So the rumor mill basically says that Jefferson Davis is outraged by this speech because he is trying to win foreign allies who will continue to purchase slave-produced cotton. And so because of those European entities that purchased this cotton are anti-slavery, if they put everything in the slavery basket, so to speak, then he worries about their desire to still purchase from them and still, you know, foster these relationships. But what's interesting is sort of Stevens is kind of like, oh, dude, I was just riffing. Like, I mean, he was speaking extemporaneously. It wasn't like he had these remarks written down. But once he started speaking, you know, he let it fly. And that is what became solidified. And I don't think Jefferson Davis could really walk that back. Diplomatically, I understood what he right. why he might be upset. But at the end
it's
of the
funny.
Day...
It's funny when you started off saying, I only try and teach primary sources, that my first thought was, well, I wonder if Stevens would say, well, technically, this isn't exactly what I said, because yes, there is this whole controversy about, you know, he didn't write, he didn't have prepared remarks, he just spoke off the cuff. Mm-hmm. But, you know, go read this speech, folks. Like, you don't off the cuff your way into repeatedly making the claim over and over and over. Like, yeah. It's not just one small little line that was, which honestly, to me, it's like, the fact that this was off the cuff shows to me more like how much you owned this,
yes,
right? And this was
right. how much you really feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these weren't carefully prepared, nuanced remarks trying to find a small lane. This was just you speaking your truth, and mm-hmm. this is what it looks like. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you think about the variety of opinion as well, I think it's important that he's not just saying slavery is the cornerstone of the CSA, but white supremacy is, because mm-hmm. you have, I mean, most white Southerners don't have the capacity to enslave someone, right? They just don't have the resources to do so. But what they do have is their whiteness. And so for him to be able to say, this is the fundamental order of this new society, not that all men are created equal, but that actually white people are better than non-white mm-hmm. people, is a really important point for him to stress.
Yeah. Which is interesting, because it means that you can abolish the institution of slavery, as we did, but still struggle with what we are struggling with today, which is white supremacy. So that, mm-hmm. you know, these arguments don't really go away because slavery no longer exists or because slavery is illegal. The arguments are still there because much of the argument is ideological. It is about how we think about Black people and whiteness and superiority and inferiority.
Yeah. Okay. To take a step back and look at kind of how history has seen this speech and how it fits into these conversations about assessing slavery and the Civil War. Obviously, at the time, we have a political and moral conversation. Then, you know, as we've discussed, into the 20th century, there's a sort of lost cause mythology which continues, and a sort of this idea of the War of Northern Aggression and so forth. You know, it really does seem like it's not until maybe around 2000 when a historian, Harry Jaffa, sort of plants a flag. And I just want to read the way that he wrote about this speech. But he says, quote, "This remarkable address conveys more than any other contemporary document, not only the soul of the Confederacy, but also of that Jim Crow South that arose from the ashes of the Confederacy. Stevens's prophecy of the Confederacy's future resembles nothing so much as Hitler's prophecies of the Thousand-Year Reich, nor are their theories very different." And I'm just curious, kind of like, well, A, you know, if you remember reading that or how that fits into the sort of historiography here, but also, like, why did he feel in the year 2000... did a historian feel like they needed to still say something so forceful about this speech from so long ago?
Well, even in the year 2000, you have textbooks that describe enslaved people as workers and that soft pedal mm-hmm. how bad slavery was. So the need to not only emphasize that this was an evil institution built on a set of immoral ideas, which is what the comparison to Hitler does, but to show the continuity,
yeah.
right? That's something that, you know, even 14 years after this, right, when the case for reparations comes out, Ta-Nehisi Coates' essay, right, one of the reasons it was so groundbreaking was because it says, no, like the harms were not just those of slavery, but that they were the harms of Jim Crow, and that lasted up through the 1960s and in certain ways even beyond. And what Jaffa is doing here is saying, we talk about this in terms of the Confederacy, but this is the template for nearly 100 years of racist governance in the former Confederacy. So that's an important point that takes a really long time mm-hmm. to seep into the general consciousness.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, historians, we operate often off of anniversaries. So I remember, I think it was 2011, I think it was the 150th anniversary of the start of the Civil War or something like that. I got to check my math now. But but, you know, it, and there were all of these, you know, conferences and papers and talks about, like, how are we going to think about this moment in this anniversary? But really, this is like an annual, if not daily, practice of going back and saying, like, how can we understand this moment, because so much about the Civil War is our current present. I mean, when you think about January 6th, when you think about all of the political turmoil that we're facing today that's highly racialized, it all goes back to this moment, to the institution of slavery, to things that we have left unfinished.
Yeah. This is a very unformed question or naive question or something. I know this is an imperfect question, but it has always struck me as putting aside like the lost cause narrative or the like war of Northern aggression kind of thing, which is all the way over at one end of the spectrum, I would say, of ways that the Civil War has been interpreted. But even these more quote unquote nuanced arguments about, well, it was really about states' rights, or it was really about economic freedom, or it was really about expansion. It has always struck me that like, even if you say that, the next clause in your sentence has to be because of slavery.
Yeah.
It was about states' rights because of slavery. It was about tariffs because of slavery. It was about expansion of slavery. So it's just like, it's never struck me as a compelling argument to even point to these other things, because underpinning them all are because of slavery.
Yeah, these aren't clean water initiatives. This is not about, you know, something completely innocuous. This is not at all what it's about. And I think the South has never been dishonest about that. I think in our current moment, maybe we're a little less willing to acknowledge that, but the South was never dishonest about the root of its wealth, about the purpose of its existence, and what made it so prosperous and politically powerful.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the episode. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you.
Thank you, Jody.
And Kelly Carter Jackson, thanks to you.
My pleasure.
Radiotopia from PRI.